Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
There is only so much time in the ground. Sooner or later, there
who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy because it's cold. The beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
Of course, the day you start something like this, is lights aren't going to come all the way on. Mood lighting.
Elliot Crump is the school superintendent in Shelby, Montana, one of the countless small rural towns that's run out of teachers.
Yeah, because at 20 minutes, the kids that come out of Bozeman and Missoula and our education schools here in Montana, they tend to focus on those larger cities. It's going to be nice to get them out here, see what it's like, and hopefully get them to join the rural teaching community.
250 miles away in Bozeman, 13 aspiring teachers from Montana State University headed out for Shelby.
What a good morning, gosh.
Shelby, Montana. I don't know too much about it. I looked it up on Google Maps. That's the only research I did. Zoomed in and it looked pretty brown, but it's okay. I'm excited anyway. I'm not there for the landscape, I'm there for the people.
I love small towns. I came from a small town, and I've always wanted to teach in a small school. So, yeah, I'm super stoked.
You are approaching your destination.
Ooh, we are approaching.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
So I'll go first. My name is Elliot Crump. I'm the superintendent here. I used to teach social studies. I'm originally from the Seattle area.
I'm Jake Lyle. I'm originally from Plains, Montana. Graduated there in 2016. I'm studying English teaching. I want to be an English teacher.
Good morning. My name is Ned Bardsley. When I grow up, I want to be an art teacher.
I would love the practicum students to go through this program, enjoy being here in Shelby, and when I have an opening next year, the year after that, the year after that, they're thinking, gosh, it would be really nice to be able to go back to Shelby and be a part of that community and that school. I don't know if it's going to work, but I hope it does.
Shelby, Montana spans 6 square miles and is home to about 700 families, one K-12 school, and one main street that runs only a few blocks. It's an hour and a half from the nearest Walmart, 3 hours from the nearest Costco, and 4 hours from the nearest major airport.
There are some districts in Montana that don't get an applicant for a job. You know, even 10 years ago, they were still pulling in people, getting applications, being more selective about who we can hire. Now it's just find someone.
Dr. Tina Versland researches rural education. For the last 3 years, she's helped run the program that sends future teachers on a week-long date with the towns that need them the most.
If you're a school and you can't fill teacher positions, what ends up happening to like your offerings? What ends up happening to your school, your students?
Can't find teachers. Young parents start to pull their kids out of school. They start sending them to neighboring schools. Maybe they leave that area. So schools can't find teachers. Schools die. Community dies.
Shelby isn't dead. But in small towns throughout Montana, this is already an emergency. Nearly half of all schools in the state now employ teachers who aren't certified, and almost all of those schools are in rural communities.
What was your temperature?
400. I think it's cooked.
That's good.
So we met in New York. Started dating in New York.
I was a city girl. I never thought I would be like in Montana. When I told my parents I was moving to Montana, they're like, where is that? You moving to the mountains?
The state.
So you've been here for 5 years. You've seen people come and go.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, when we first got here, we hired 10 teachers, and I lost 8 of them within a year or two. I haven't heard of things that I haven't tried. If I heard about it, I would have tried it.
That's 36.
One of the things Elliot has pioneered, looking for teachers outside of the country, in places where $35,000 a year is a small fortune. 4 years ago, he hired his first teacher from the Philippines. He's since hired 4 more.
Shelby is like, oh my God, this is really a small town? And I didn't even see people walking on the streets and said, oh my gosh, this is kind of, you know, it's like a ghost town or something.
I imagine you weren't like, I'm going to go teach in Shelby, Montana.
No, no. It's the Shelby he chose me. Even though we don't have that much of shopping malls and all the stuff, but we like the simplicity of Shelby. I could send money to my family back in the Philippines, and I could also save money. So it's really, really helpful.
So bringing the Filipino teachers here has worked, right? They've come, they've wanted to stay. How it works in the long run, I'm not sure. Their end of their visa is going to be after 3 years, then they can get a 2-year extension. After that, they'll be headed back to the Philippines.
It doesn't sound like a long-term solution to the problem.
It doesn't sound like a long-term solution.
Congratulations. That's why Elliot and the whole town rolled out the red carpet for the MSU students.
There we go. X. Nice job. All right. Equal
lateral
triangle.
Welcome to your favorite class.
Yeah, I'm
sure. All right. First off, how are y'all doing with it?
Good.
Okay, so you're going to try to capture that bravery as well.
When they weren't in classrooms teaching, they were given the star treatment. They took Shelby's fire trucks out for a joyride. They shot guns. And they went bowling. But 20-somethings are 20-somethings. They want to know what happens after 8 p.m. on a school night.
See what the first one we get. Oh, come on.
Casey, 22.
How do you up your age? I think I'm going to need to do that.
Oh, yeah, definitely do
how
that.
How do you do
it? I got two.
You don't have a lot of options.
I don't have many options here. This is 76 miles. I moved it up to 50, and then we're back.
I mean, you could be like a really big fish in a small pond.
It's true. Maybe.
Hello. Hi. I'm Rochelle.
Josh,
nice to meet you.
So for someone in their 20s, like, what are the sort of things that you end up doing?
Well, other than going out on a county road and just shooting gophers or shooting basically anything, I mean, as far as the community goes, we have pool league, dart league, bowling league. When you're bored.
Oh, bro.
Who here would move to this area if they were offered a job today?
I'd have to talk to my fiance. I'm like, I can't like totally put up my hand.
Jake, you're super down to move here. Like, you would move here now, but your immediate response was, if I can convince my fiance.
It'd be a hard sell probably for my fiance. She's an interior designer, and there's probably not many interior design jobs around Shelby.
I think the issue is a social life. So like, the school's great, but what are you going to do outside of school?
Bowling league!
Small towns are probably not for everybody, but you owe it to yourself to give it a chance to do more than drive through it and experience it for yourself.
I don't know how long I can stay, and I think that's the problem we're facing. I don't know how I can help that.
Okay, I'm back today. We were on just maybe 20 minutes, just no, 30 minutes, something like that. Yes, but I didn't say anything. Anyway, but I was under the weather. I'm back to 100%. Today, jump off topic, and we're not going to do a long show today or a type show today. However, Monday we will. Monday we've got a special guest calling in, and on a topic this is going to be dealing with our goal. Well, he's going to give us a model in which we can reach our goal of having a six or seven figure day. But that's on Monday, so make sure you're here on time Monday. Now, today, yesterday at this time of day, I think I was going to feel well enough to be on now, but I'm back to 100% now. But Trump indictment, so we're good. Well, the title today is Trump indictment, good or bad, if you have any thoughts on it. Trump indictment, good or bad, what are your thoughts on it, if you have any? 619-768-2945. And because that's trending. President Trump got indicted yesterday. So, and what for those of you who don't know what indictment, that word indictment means, it simply means officially accused of a crime. Doesn't mean that they did it. It just means they're officially accused of one. And then I think next week he has to go in and mugshot, fingerprinted, that type of thing. Then he'll be released. And then they prepare the state, wants to, prepare for trial. So I'll get Warren Houston in here. He's a lawyer around these parts, so get him and talk about that. Anyway, but today's, if you guys want to talk about it, Trump indictment, good or bad. Now, yesterday, yesterday, and I didn't say anything. I thought I was going to have some strength to talk, but it didn't work out that way. Yesterday, let me see what we, we're going to cover this topic. Yesterday, we're going to cover this topic probably Tuesday in its entirety. Betty Mason, Bridget Betty Mason, Mary Ellen Pleasant, and California reparations. But Monday's a key show, so I wasn't feeling well yesterday, so this was like a really brief. Now you mentioned it, I didn't have any audio to play on any of these three. But Tuesday we'll go back to this. Betty Mason, Mary Ellen Pleasant, and California reparations. Matter of fact, while I uncover, because what we're going to cover Tuesday, okay, let me, first thing, who is Bridget Betty Mason, or Betty Mason, B-I-D-D-Y, and I'm just reading off of, and I've covered her before on here. This is in line of, let me talk it out. All right. Betty Mason, sunrise August 15, 1818, sunset January 15, 1891. Was an American nurse and California real estate entrepreneur and philanthropist. She was one of the founders of the first African Methodist Episcopal Church in Los Angeles, California. She was born a slave and developed a variety of skills in the development knowledge of and develop a knowledge of medicine, child care, and livestock care. A California court granted her and her daughter's freedom in 1856. Okay, and her occupations, once again, midwife. She was a midwife, delivered babies. California real estate entrepreneur. She became a millionaire. Here's a woman born in 1891. Excuse me, born in 1818, passed away in 1891. In California, particularly the Los Angeles area, of course, it's not as big and expensive as it is now, but she was born a slave and became a millionaire. All right. She was a nurse and philanthropist, okay, and she helped found a church in L.A. Let's see, early life. Betty Mason was born into slavery in Portland on August 15, 1818 in Hancock County, Georgia. But her exact birthplace and birth date are unknown. At an early age, she was taken from her parents and moved to a plantation of another state. So she was a de facto orphan. Although records during her youth are incomplete, she spent most of her time on a plantation owned by Robert Smithson. During her teenage years, she learned domestic and agricultural skills. Additionally, she developed the skills in herbal medicine and midwifery taught to her by other enslaved women. These skills were passed down from African, Caribbean, and Native American traditions. Her knowledge benefited both the enslaved people and the plantation owners. According to some authors, Betty was either given or sold to Robert May Smith and his bride, Rebecca Dorn Smith, in the 1840s. Betty was valuable to the Smiths because of her knowledge of medicine, child care, and livestock care. Betty had three children, born in about 1838. Betty was, and her daughter Anne was born in about 1844. Harriet was born about 1847. And the fathers of her children are unknown, but some authors have speculated that Robert M. Smith, likely fathered at least one of her children. A 25-year-old enslaved woman named Hannah worked with Betty on the plantation. Like Betty, Hannah had three children of her own. Okay, freedom. Let's see, she relocated missionaries from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, proselytized in Mississippi. They taught Smith and his wife and his six children, and they converted in 1847. Enslaved people were only considered to be preached to and baptized with their owner's permission. According to the church policy, it's unknown whether Betty was baptized. The Smith household joined a group of other church members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and moved from Mississippi to meet a Mormon exodus from Nauvoo, Illinois in 1847. The group traveled to Pueblo, Colorado, and joined with the 6th Detachment from a Mormon battalion. During the journey west, Betty herded the livestock, prepared meals, midwife, while caring for her own children. They later joined the main body of Mormons crossing the plains and arrived in Salt Lake City. Ooh, man, that's on foot. Foot in this Conestoga wagon, I imagine. Let's see, 34 enslaved people went with their owners to the Utah Territory. The enslaved people built log cabins, cleared fields, and planted in the town of Cottonwood in the Salt Lake Valley. Church leader Brigham Young sent a group of Mormons to Southern California in 1851. Young instructed the group of that California was a free state and their slaves would be free when they arrived in California. Now, this is important, people. I'll read it again. Church leader Brigham Young sent a group of Mormons to Southern California in 1851. Young instructed the group that California was a free state and their slaves would be free when they arrived in California. Robert Smith, the people he enslaved and his family settled in San Bernardino, California. Biddy was the number of enslaved people in the San Bernardino settlement as part of the Compromise of 1850. California was admitted as a free state. Nevertheless, some migrants from the South, including Robert Smith, continued to bring enslaved people into the state. California courts routinely ruled against the freedom claims of enslaved Africans in support of slave owners, although it was a free state. Biddy was under the control of Robert Smith and ignorant of the laws of her rights. Okay. She probably didn't know how to read them, I'm guessing. Anyway, freedom. This is for Biddy. In 1856, Smith decided to move to the slave state of Texas and sell his slaves there. He told the slaves they would be free in Texas. Oh, God, he's underhanded. Anyway, but Biddy relayed her fears being separated from the children and remaining enslaved to two free black men, Charles Owens and Miguel Pepper. The men, including the sheriffs and others, served Smith with a court order. A Los Angeles court heard the habeas corpus action regarding her freedom. Smith claimed that Biddy wanted to go to Texas. All right. He then bribed her lawyer to not show up. Oh, God, he's underhanded. She was not allowed to testify in court since California law prohibited black people from testifying against white people. After Smith failed to appear in court on January 21, 1856, the judge presiding over the case, Benjamin Ignatius Hayes, freed Biddy and her family members. In 1860, so that was in 1856, in 1860 she received a certified copy of a document that guaranteed her freedom. Biddy had no legal last name when she was enslaved. She was just Biddy, all right? After becoming free, Biddy Mason and her daughters moved in with Robert Owens, the father of Charles Owens, and a well-known Los Angeles businessman. Her daughter, Ellen, would eventually marry Charles Owens. Mason worked in Los Angeles as a nurse and midwife delivering hundreds of babies during her career. Using her knowledge of herbal medicine, she risked her life to care for those affected by a smallpox epidemic in L.A., California. One of her employers was the noted physician, John Strobel Griffin. Saving carefully, she was one of the first African-American women to own land in Los Angeles, California. As a business, now this is a woman who probably couldn't read. But she was one of the first to own land in Los Angeles. Okay. As a businesswoman, she amassed a relatively large fortune, which she shared generously with charities. Mason also fed and sheltered the poor and visited prisoners. She was instrumental in founding a traveler's aid center and a school and daycare for black children, open to any child that who had nowhere to go. Because of her kind and giving spirit, many called her Auntie Mason or Grandma Mason. In 1852, with her son-in-law Charles Owens and other black residents of Los Angeles, California, Mason was the founding member of the first AME Baptist Church of Los Angeles, the city's first black church. Mason spoke fluent Spanish and was well-known figure in the city. So here is, and she was also became friends with the governor of California, the last governor, the last, let's see, Pico, as they call it, the last governor of Alta California, a wealthy Los Angeles landlord. So here it, now I got a method to my madness here today, because I didn't cover this yesterday, and this is to prep you for Monday, in a way. We're not going to cover it all Monday, but it, Tuesday, you know, all this, Monday's the keystone, okay? But anyway, so here's a person, Betty Mason, probably couldn't read for most of her life. Was born a slave, made out to California, gained her freedom, and point, she became a real estate tycoon. She got rich, probably on a millionaire level. Now, the next person that we're going to is Mary Ellen Pleasant. All right, Mary Ellen Pleasant, sunrise August 19, 1814, sunset January 11, 1904, was a 19th century entrepreneur, financier, and there's Wikipedia articles on these people. You can look them up. Betty was a black woman born in slavery in the United States, and here's another one, Mary Pleasant. All right, she was arguably the first self-made millionaire of African-American heritage, preceding Madam C.J. Walker by decades. I don't know why they keep on putting out, because Annie Malone, who was Madam C.J. Walker's mentor, was a millionaire when C.J. Walker, or Sarah Breedlove at the time, met her. Anyway, that's another podcast that we've already covered it. All right, so she was born in Philadelphia, either Georgia, Virginia, or Philadelphia. Nobody knows for sure. She passed away. She was an entrepreneur and abolitionist. She identified herself as a capitalist by profession. Here's a woman that was her occupation. You ask her, she says, I'm a capitalist. Mary of a, here's a picture of her online. All right, so her aim was to earn as much money as she was able to help as many people as she could. With her riches, she was able to provide transportation, housing, and food for survival. She trained people how to stay safe, succeed, carry themselves more. This one-woman social agency. I got to screenshot that statement. The one-woman social agency. She was social services before there was a government brand of social services. Served African Americans before and during the Civil War. As well as meeting different, of course, California wasn't in the Civil War, as well as meeting different set of needs after emancipation. She worked on the Underground Railroad and expanded it westward during the California Gold Rush era, which she and her friend and financial supporter John Brown and was well known among abolitionists. She helped women who lived in California during the California Gold Rush stay safe and become self-sufficient. That's very important. After the Civil War, she won several civil rights victories that resulted in her being called the mother of human rights in California. Legal battles, though, had mixed results. Okay, realizing that she was in a tenuous position as a black woman, she gained political and financial power. She sought ways to blend into the culture of her times. She portrayed herself as a housekeeper and a cook. Now, this is a rich woman, okay? The first documented black female millionaire in the United States. If you asked her, she was a capitalist, but she portrayed herself as a housekeeper and a cook long after she was wealthy. She used these roles to get to know wealthy citizens and to gain information for her investments. In the 1870s, she made acquaintance of Thomas Bell, a wealthy banker and capitalist, which helped her make money and keep her riches and true financial status a secret. She spent her money and developed the plans to build a large mansion that outwardly was to seem like it was Bell's residence. She assumed the role of housekeeper for the Bells, but it was not a secret in the city that she actually ran the household, managed the servants, and also managed the relationships among the Bells. Author Edward White said of her, as an entrepreneur, civil rights activist, and benefactor, Mary Ellen Pleasant made a name and fortune of herself in the gold rush era of San Francisco, shattering racial taboos. Now, let me see. There's a lot written about her. Now, let me tie that in. I'm tying this in to what I wanted to get to yesterday. And we're going to get to it with a plan on Tuesday. But we got the guest on Monday who gives us the blueprint. In California, there is there are people. Well, let me put it out. Let me read it to you. California reparations amount, if any, left to politicians. Okay. The leader of California's First in the Nation Reparations Task Force, and once again, California wasn't even a slave state. Document. They did in the Civil War. And before, California was Mexico. It was first Mexico. All right, so in any event, okay. Let's see. The leader of California's First in the Nation Reparations Task Force on Wednesday said it won't take a stance on how much the state should compensate black residents from whom economists estimate may be owed more than $800 billion for decades of over-policing. See, they're making up their own definition of reparations. All right, so they're basing it on over-policing. This is in contemporary times. Disproportionate incarceration in contemporary times and housing discrimination. So they already know they don't have a leg to stand on because California, A, was not even California as we know it. It was originally Mexico. So now they had to bring it in. So they know they weren't going to get nowhere that way. So, all right. All right. All right. So the $800 billion is more than 2.5 times California's $3 billion, $300 billion annual budget, and does not include the recommended $1 million per older black resident for health disparities, that have shortened the average lifespan, nor does it figure count. All right, they got another joke out in California. He says that black folks in California now are owed $5 billion. It's not $5 billion, $5 million. All right, let me read the definition of reparations. Let me read the dictionary. Okay, reparation, the making of amends for a wrong one has done by paying money to otherwise helping those who have been wronged. The courts require a convicted offender to make financial reparations to the victim. So that happens all the time now. Okay, another definition, the compensation for war damage paid by the defeated state. What's a simple definition of reparations? What are reparations? Reparations are the act or process of making amends for a wrong according to the United Nations. Adequate, effective, and prompt reparation is intended to promote justice by redressing gross violations of international human rights law and serious violations of international humanitarian law. All right, and then let's see. They get the five. What are the five types of reparations? Well, the resuscitation and assurance, non-repetition reparations, restitution and repatriation, compensation reparations, satisfaction and rehabilitation reparations. So you got five fundamental forms of reparations. All right, some of these Californians are asking for like anywhere from $1 million to $5 million. Here's what we're going to do Tuesday. Although you got to tune in Monday. Monday we're not talking about none of this reparation stuff. But on Tuesday, we're going to take a look at we got a guy coming in Monday. What he's talking about. Now, what he's going to give us a pretty good business model. Added on to the models that we discussed earlier this week and last week. So, because the way I'm looking at it is this way: we already discussed just now. There are five basic fundamentals, or distinctions of fundamentals. So we're going to take the compensation route. Now, here's the next thing. We're not looking to get reparations from the government at all. Nothing from the local, state, or federal government at all. We're not looking for anybody to give us anything. Because we got a civil right. So we're going to be running what I call a social experiment where we'll demonstrate and we'll document this through live streams that it's easier for, if you're really gung-ho on reparations, it's easier to do DIY, do-it-yourself, call it do-it-yourself reparations, whatever you want to call it. It's easier to get your 40 acres yourself than expecting the government to give you 40 acres and a mule, number one, or 40 acres and a laptop today. It's easier if you yourself exercise your civil right, which means all you got to do is just do it, to build $200 cabins, $500 cabins, $2,000, whatever, tiny house, whatever you want to call it, it's easier to do that and earn $1 million up to $5 million. It's easy to do that, and that's what we're going to document. I'm saying that we will be it'll be easier to, and I already got 14 acres. So, but I'm going to get 40, but I'm not, you know, 40 on top of that. All right. So that's what we're going to do. Anybody who wants to join on that social experiment, instead of waiting on the government, instead of looking back 400 years ago or whatever, look at what opportunities that you have. Once again, we're not going to the government. We're not going to the local, state, or federal government. We're not looking for anybody to give us anything. All I'm saying with this social experiment, because I'm looking at if Biddy Mason born a slave. Now, nobody who's living and breathing right now in the United States who's American, none of you were born a slave. But so if Bridget Biddy Mason, who was born a slave, then she learned how to speak Spanish fluently, and she became a real estate tycoon in California with no internet connection, no smartphone, no tablet, no desktop, no laptop, and probably no telephone for most of her life. If she can do that, then we have no excuses now in 2023. Now, Mary Ellen Pleasant, who described herself as a capitalist, if she can do, who is the first black woman millionaire in the United States, documented. If she can do that, once again, with no internet connection, we all got internet connections. If she can do it without a smartphone, with the modern technologies that we have today. You know, matter of fact, you know what? Let me look up something. Unless one of you guys out there know it. First telephone. First commercial telephone. And let's get something basic here, okay? First commercial telephone. The first commercial telephone used by Alexander Graham Bell was based on his patent of January 1877. The telephone consisted of a single triary. All right, so the first commercial telephone, November 12, 1877, and the first commercial telephone company started on January 28, 1877. 78. Okay, and then let me go back to Bridget. All right, 1878. All right, Biddy Mason passed away in 1891. So most of her life, she didn't even have access to a telephone. She might not have had one at all, but, I mean, she heard about it, but I'm sure before she died. But she became a multimillionaire, or through real estate, in California. She didn't have no phone, no smartphone, no computer of any type, no electronics of any type, social networking. So that's that. Tuesday, we'll be rolling out, and you guys can join us on our, I'm calling it a social experiment, that for what these people in California are asking for in reparation, from $1 million to $5 million, it's quick. You can get your own $1 million to $5 million, any amount you want. by just exercising your civil right right now to go out and just do it. I mean, you can buy $1 million worth of real estate just on your phone if you wanted to. Let's see, Mary Ellen Pleasant, and I'm going to the phone lines here. Mary Ellen Pleasant, okay, she passed away in 1904. Okay, so she knew about the telephone, and she probably could have had one. But the first telephone company, okay, hold on, let me go back to that. I forgot where it was. First telephone company. Let's see, company. First telephone company, or a Bell Telephone Company. It was founded in Boston, Massachusetts in 1877. All right, so more than likely, and let me read Bell Telephone Company. The Bell Telephone Company was organized in Boston, Massachusetts, July 9, 1877, by Alexander Graham Bell's father-in-law, Gardner Green Hubbard, who also helped organize the New England Telephone Company and Telegraph Company, the common a common law joint stock company, Bell Telephone Company, which was started on the basis of holding potentially valuable patents. Okay, the two companies merged on January 17, 1879. The two entities formed the National Bell Telephone Company of Boston and International Bell Telephone Company. International Bell became headquartered in Brussels, Belgium. Theodore Vail took over its operations, becoming a central figure in the rapid growth and commercial success. The National Bell Telephone Company merged with American Speaking Telephone Company on March. So these the two women I talked about today. They didn't have anything. Hold it. Let's see. They didn't have none of these electronics. They were predecessor of the Bell Company. The Bell Patent Association, February 27th, 1875 to July 9th, 1877, a name later assigned by historians, was not a corporate entity but a trustee in a partnership. Okay. Earliest division of Bell. All right. So telephones and so Mason and Biddy Mason and what's her name? Mason and I'm coming to the phones in a moment. Mason and Mary Ellen Pleasant. They were on the West Coast. So the telephone company phenomenon and that started on, you know, the Northeast in the North, northeastern part of the country. And more than likely, telephones were expensive back then because for many years, Ma Bell rented you a telephone. And I'm going to have to do more research on, because they had to get to a price point where the average citizen could afford it, which now, it is. So, like I say, Tuesday we're going to roll it out. Monday is a very important. Monday we're not going to be talking about reparations. We're not going to be talking about the experiment, but it's going to lay down some very important information where you can, do anything you want to do. I'm just saying that we're going to Tuesday will be organized because, like I said, the plan on or how you can get seven figures without going to any government agency, anything like that. All right, I'm off of my rant for today, but we're gonna open up the phone lines. Because the last 2 days, man, I was feeling miserable. but I got some relief around 3 a.m. this morning. Didn't get much sleep last night. I'll catch up on that sometime today. But I'm back to 100%, so. But Monday, for sure, we got a guest come in, and then we'll be, let's see. He's calling out. I'll give one clue. He's calling in from another state. He's calling in from another state. So Monday we're going, because, you know, too, we might draw out our openings, you know, 15, 20 minutes. We're going to do, you know, the regular opening and maybe one other thing. And then, so if you're going to be late, you can't be no more than about 5 minutes late on Monday. But then, he's going to lay down some head, well, information that we can immediately put to use. Okay, so, so today, oh, wait a minute. Let me go back to today's off topic if you guys want to bite. Okay, because I was just going over what I was so miserable yesterday. Man, I cut this show off in less than 30 minutes. I didn't say anything. But the rant that I just went to, that's what I wanted to mention yesterday. But trending topics will be all this weekend. And it started yesterday. The Trump indictment. President Donald Trump has been the first president in the United States history, at least that I know of, that has been indicted. Now, for those of you who don't know, you can look up indictment on in a dictionary, but or a legal dictionary, but the word indict means officially accused of a crime. It doesn't mean that they're guilty of a crime. It just means if, and you know what, a lot of people that get indicted, many of those people get found innocent. So it just means that he was accused, officially accused of a crime. So what are your thoughts on it? Because two previous attorney generals, I believe, or DAs, district attorneys, that refused to, you know, bring charges. You know. So, you know, maybe, I got theories. I don't know. I mean, I believe, can't prove it, but I believe that if he hadn't declared throwing his hat to run for president, he, in my opinion, he wouldn't have been indicted. That's just my opinion. Because there were two previous AGs that could have, you know, put him in, you know, did the grand jury thing, but they decided not to do it. So whether this current DA is politically motivated, don't know. Because attorney generals, the head attorney general, or head prosecutor in a local jurisdiction, they're politicians. To be the head prosecutor in a local, you know, local town, local county, and on a state level, the attorney general, those politicians, they are elected officials. Now, they can pick their staff of assistant ADAs or prosecutors, but the head ones, the DA of New York City, okay, and the Attorney General for New York State, those are elected politicians. They're elected by voters. And show me a politician, any politician, who particularly, because on that level, you're bankrolled into office, and the people that typically bankroll you into office have an agenda. And you're just the face of that agenda. That's from an elected dog catcher, your local dog catcher who might be elected to office. That's a stretch of, you know, But all the way up to the President of the United States, all right, the people, and Aunt Lyndon Johnson, President Lyndon Johnson, if you support me before the election, you'll have access. People who make campaign contributions, particularly the larger ones, and from the PACs, the political action committees and the super PACs, you don't even have to be a citizen of the United States in many cases. People who donate, and they come through, operate through a think tank and lobbyists, they have access. All right, you know, I think this, if we can get some policy on this, that, or the other, whatever it might be, God, there's an infinite amount of things out here. But that's how the local DA and the attorney general for a state, they're just the face of people who bankroll them into office with an agenda. Perfectly legal to do in this country. Okay, it's all above board. There are rules on that. All right. Now, it also is now sitting out. Johnson said you get access. So, now, ballot box voting is the weakest form of voting. It's important, but it's the weakest form of voting. Because you can put money, you can help bankroll an election of a DA or a prosecutor and have access on the front end and never go to a voting box, a voting booth, and cast one vote, not one. Me personally, I'd rather do the access voting, help bankroll an election. So anyway, President Trump is now, he has not been arrested, I believe. Now, this is hard to talk for yesterday. I haven't listened to anything today. He'll go into the whatever central booking is in New York. Fingerprints, mugshot, and that'll be a couple of days' stories right there. And I'm gonna tell you how this could play out, based on how the system works in this country, anyway. Number one, they could go to trial. But 95% of criminal cases in the United States, particularly on the state level, are plea bargained out. 95% of the cases that people get accused of criminally, indicted on anything, never go to trial. They're plea bargained. Okay. So somewhere along the line, Donald Trump, one option, this is just an option, based on what goes on in the system right now, is he'll be offered a plea bargain. All right, if you cop out to this, you know, then we'll drop the other charges because the indictment hasn't been unsealed yet. That's what I heard yesterday. I have not checked on anything today. All right. So now another option is, you know, Gerald Ford, morning, way back when, I forgot the year, went on national TV and gave President Richard Nixon a pardon. It could go down that way. All right. Or it could go to trial. Trump could get convicted on all counts, and the judge could sentence him to prison. Now, that's going to be a hell of an awkward situation. You got a convicted, bad look on the United States if it gets that far, which I doubt it will. And then you lock up former president of the United States. Real bad look on the United States. But on a scale of 100%, I'm pretty sure there's a 99.99% chance that will not happen. But, hey, I could be wrong. But, you know, those are the general options that are out there, based on what happens in the criminal justice system already. But in my opinion, in my, I'm just one out of 8 billion people on the planet who has an opinion. So it really doesn't mean much, okay? It, he got accused of a crime, but more than likely he will never go to jail or prison because there's a difference between jail and prison. More than likely, the closer he'll get is the mugshot, but more than likely, because he's not a flight risk, in my opinion. I'm not the judge or the magistrate, but I'm just saying, I mean, people globally know his face. So more than likely, I mean, he's not a flight risk. All right. And with his personality, and I don't know him personally, but I'm just speculating, he doesn't run from a fight. So, and he's not going to bow out. I could be wrong. Those are just my opinions. So with that, all right, that's my second rant for, and the last one for today. I'm going to the phone lines here. Wait a minute. Hold it right. My phone's got to repopulate. Here. And Monday now, we're not talking about none of this. We're not talking about Trump on Monday. We're not talking about reparations on Monday. Or this experiment. We ain't talking about none of that Monday. It's a paradigm-shifting show on Monday, though. Well, I'll say it deals with tiny houses. I'll put it that much. Okay, 314 area code. Your mic is open.
LA, what do you think about the organization that's providing tiny homes for veterans?
There might be one, two, or three of those. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I do too, because a lot of them are so severely disabled.
Mm-hmm.
That's something along that line of assistance. And charity is very, very thoughtful and something that's of need. I had a friend of mine, mm-hmm. still is a friend, he came back from Vietnam. And he was involved in an automobile accident. He was in Special Forces and left him paralyzed and waist down. So he found himself in many opportunities that are available for people of his situation who have served in our military. I think it's a good thing, too.
Right. And we'll bring, matter of fact, we'll get Robin on for that one. Because she's a, I don't know if she's a disabled vet, but I know these two, and we'll bring them on. Quick question, what's your take, if any, on the Trump indictment?
I don't have much to say about that. I think it's a waste of time. So
okay.
That's the same thing that you had to prosecutor, first black female prosecutor for the city of St. Louis, got caught up in the same sort of thing when she charged the newly elected governor of Missouri, Eric Greitens, said there was videos of him in a hotel with a woman that was unconscious and he took nude pictures of her. Well, in the
okay.
time come for her to produce the evidence, there was no evidence. So what happened is the Democrats set her up. Now there's a move in Missouri by the Attorney General to remove her for not carrying out the duties of her job. All the prosecutors, except for about five, have quit out of her office. And she's one of several black females that's running their office in a derelict way. People talk about the one in Chicago. And they talk about, I think that Mosley, I think she's gone, but I'm not sure. But these guys are trying to meet the promise of some political aspiration, probably to become the governor of New York.
Yep. Yep. I agree with you. I believe it's politically motivated.
This is what has been infamously called nigger politics in some circles.
Yep.
So another thing, and you know, you look at Lori Lightfoot. Look at the crap she pulled off. I mean, that woman was totally irresponsible. And I don't know, and the thing about it, the other lady that she had a runoff with in the election, I don't know if she would have been any better because she was heavily sponsored by the teachers union. They all are. This guy that's running, in the runoff now, Brandon, black person who Bernie Sanders came and talked to support. Hell, he's heavily supported by teachers unions, and he's for a sanctuary city, and among mm-hmm. some other things. So don't have much to choose from, do they?
Yeah. Well, I believe you're right about the Attorney General of New York State. If she runs for governor one day, I wouldn't be surprised, because I think she tried to run the NRA out of New York State. And she also sued the New York Police Department, I think last year. I don't know
well,
if that
she's the prosecutor. This guy that's named Trump is the district attorney for New York State.
Right.
Those two different positions between this woman, I think her last name is James, I'm not sure, and this guy, Bragg, they're two different positions. Now, as far as your reparations, hey, look, LA, if a city or a state wants to pay reparations, that's up to them. But when it comes down to the federal government, I totally am adamant against that, because there's no reasonable cause for it whatsoever. And you see that with the way these activists are moving around. First, they
right.
try to get it from the federal government because they know the federal government got deep pockets. The federal government told them to go to hell. Now they're trying to work at state and local, which they should have been doing anyway. Well, see, the problem is there. Your definition for reparation, what was it again? You read a little bit earlier.
Well, let me go back and read that. And I, you know what, I don't, all right, hold on, let me get the definition first, reparations.
Yeah, read that.
Okay, reparations, all right, it says reparations can take numerous forms, including affirmative action, individual monetary payments, settlements, scholarships, waiving of fees, systematic initiatives to offset injustices, land-based compensation related to independence, apologies, and acknowledgement of adjustments and token measures. Now, Wikipedia says reparations for slavery. In the applications of the concept, reparations to victims of slavery and or their descendants, or the concepts of reparation in legal philosophy and reparations in transitional justice. And then I just read, it can take place. So, now one guy in California is talking about, well, black folk, whoever in California, should get $1 million to $5 million as a reparations check. But
for what?
I think that's crazy. But, because,
yeah,
for instance, when Rodney King got beat, Rodney King was you can call it reparations. Rodney King got compensated $3 million for the beating that he got. All right. But not every California, black California, has been violated. I don't see where they come up with every black person in California should get a $1 million to $5 million check. And some think that's not even not enough. I think it's ridiculous. Because
well,
like
your definition that you was reading points to particular people that does harm. Some people long since gone. They are long since gone. The state government at that time is long since gone. The state government was voted in by people, which would include everybody, right? The government is supposed to serve right. Everybody. It's long since gone. And see, they don't went
and
from slavery.
Yeah,
slavery had nothing to do with it.
Right.
That whole
oh, yeah,
idea
well, yeah,
about
well,
reparations
well,
to slavery is...
Right, California, their reparations bill that they're trying to push, not the state, but activists within the state, they're trying to pass a bill that has really nothing to do with slavery at all.
Right, it's about
but
them being
once
treated
again, people.
Mean.
Well, I mean, the city, various
treated
cities out in California,
who?
Particularly large as L.A., San Diego, the Rodney King case was just one. But the city of California, I mean, various cities in California, as well as various cities across the nation, like George Floyd, his family was compensated for his death. But not every black person that lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota got a check.
Well,
so,
you're right. George Floyd's family was compensated.
What's that?
What about, let me ask you a question. What about the people that George Floyd committed a crime again? Should they not file liens against his the money that his family got for his death?
Well, that's a possibility. They could sue his estate.
George Floyd did go. George Floyd, of course, they're going to try to say that. Well, they can't say that the statute of limitation is passed because they don't use that with Donald Trump right now, right?
You know what? The Donald Trump thing is over with. Alleged some kind of bookkeeping. They call it hush money. It sounds like a matter of accounting, and Trump's not an accountant. And over a porn star. Come on, I mean, this country.
Well, she was countersued. She had to pay him $300,000, and she said herself she didn't have nothing to do with him. But regardless of that, on the issue of statute of limitation, they ain't worrying about statute of limitation with him. So what I'm saying is that this stuff in California is pulling. Of course, if they won't, if California won't agree with that, it's up to California. Like I said before, when it started talking about getting it from the federal government, now they're trying to get it from me, and I'm totally against it.
Well...
So who's the people
that committed the harm?
Just like you said, who's the people that committed the harm? That's the problem they have in Evanston, Illinois. You know how many people so far have been able to benefit from what they're talking about? About a half dozen.
I have no
if
idea.
If I'm not mistaken.
Has anybody ever been
check it out.
Has anybody gotten anything?
About a half dozen. And how the hell are you going to give one particular ethnic group something and not give it, make people of today pay for one particular ethnic group based on their skin color and not everybody? Everybody experienced that damn stuff, that type of discrimination. I was reading, you had a woman by the name of Cecilia Payne. She's basically a white astrophysicist. She's a female. And she got pushed around, denied, lied to, stolen from. So where is her call for reparation in her inventions as it applies to astrophysics? So that can go on and on and on and on. But if California want to do what they want to do, let California do it. I don't have no problem with that. But like I said before, when it goes down to trying to get something out of the federal government, then that's when you're going to get some pushback. is silly anyway, and I bet that city council in that city that came up there, I bet that city council is probably either not all black or majority black. That's the kind of politics that you can think have come out of some of these people. In the city of St. Louis, they used to have 28 alderpersons, people that run people that run the government. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They voted to cut the aldermanic board down from 28 to 14. So
okay.
People had to run for the 14 new positions. One black woman was elected, and soon she get elected, guess what she's doing? She's proposing that they double the salary. Well, good goddamn. You went from 28 to 14 in order because of budgetary reason, and you don't have the type of population. So you're saying that now that you don't went from 28 to 14, that you should be, your salary should be doubled from the city? That's ignorant.
Mm.
That's the only progress they made, is going from 28 to 14. As far as any other duties that you would expect for them to carry out, ain't nothing done. And nothing happened. So it just goes to show you the backwards thinking in some of these folks. It's toxic thinking, reckless
right.
thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So these new ideas of charging reparations, of asking for reparations because we were treated mean, is a bunch of malarkey. Where is the people that treated you mean? You should have took them to court at the time.
Right. You can take
so
them
now
to court, or
you show up in 2023 and tell the people of 2023 that didn't have jack to do with that, that they need to take their money that they contribute to the operation of the government and pay you for some damn frivolous idea that you as a descendant of somebody who was treated mean back in the past, they need to be compensated for. Well, what about the people that burned down the Korean businesses in L.A. during the riots? You remember that?
I remember that. Oh, you know,
the people
very
that
good point.
The who
Los
the people
Angeles
that
riots,
burned the
right after, you're right, the,
who was the people, who was the people
after,
that
the,
burned
during
the
riots?
Down? They were black.
King riots, L.A. riots, there were many black people that burnt down, looted, and robbed the Korean businesses. So those people, if you ever find out who they were, could be taken into court and sued for damages.
Well, not
then,
yet.
You can also sue the city of California.
LA.
I'm assuming you can sue the city that those places were in, because where was the police protection?
Well, let's sue all
so they
black
can sue
people.
The city of Los Angeles. Huh?
Why don't they just sue all the blacks in Los Angeles? Look at Chicago.
Well, not all the blacks
look
in Los
at all
Angeles.
The shootings there. Yeah, look at all the shootings
yeah,
that's going on there. So every time you shoot somebody, you got to have emergency medical services come out and tend to them. That all that stuff,
right?
That adds up. So should all blacks be sued in order to compensate for those expenses?
No, because they didn't participate. Not all blacks participated in that.
Well, the same thing.
But that would
them.
Be a switch, though.
Well, that isn't that the likelihood of what these people in L.A. talking about, too? They want to sue the present government today, which blacks and Mexicans and Latinos are paying into. They didn't have nothing to do with that.
You know, that would be a switch because
if you had, because we got cameras out here, if you can identify, you know what, just one of the looters of some of these urban, you know, arrests that, you know, like the Rodney King thing or what happened with...
How about what happened to Reginald Denny, the truck driver?
Man, you know what? He's lucky to be alive. Somebody took a cinder block and hit him in the head. He could have
Should not his family sue Black? In L.A.?
If they can identify, which I'm sure they could, if they can identify the guy who did it to him, he deserves to be sued for damages.
Well, you don't have to sue the guy. See, the way they talking, it ain't the person in particular. They're talking about a particular skin color.
Okay, so in other words, it's not going to work that way. That's a good point.
Well, that's what they're trying to do in his other cases, are they not?
Yeah, you're right. That's what they're trying to do.
In these other cases, they're trying to sue all whites, or they're trying to sue the whole damn city. So Reginald Denny's family should sue all blacks out there in Los Angeles. South Central. Did that happen in South Central? I forget where it happened.
That happened in South Central. He was in his truck. He was a trucker. And they stopped this truck and pulled him out of the truck. And somebody took it looked like a cinder block, and that's a heavy piece of material. And he's lucky he did not die. Because that's attempted murder. Yeah.
Yeah, it was some savages. That's what it was.
But see, you know what? The law is crazy because several years ago there was a case in New York City. Bernard Goetz. Bernard Goetz was a white man who had been robbed by some young black youth previously. So he said, you know what, I'm not going to get caught like that again. He went and he got a gun legally. And one day, three or four black guys on the subway, they were messing with him again. It's people that he didn't know. This time, Robert Goetz was prepared. He pulled out his gun and shot one of them and got paralyzed. Bernard Goetz, that's his name. You know, if I can track him down, I'd love to get him on here. I think he was criminally prosecuted, and he got sued by one of the guys who tried to rob him, and Bernard Goetz shot him, and he's paralyzed in a wheelchair today, if he's still alive. He sued Goetz. And I think he won. So
that's the mentality in New York. You shoot and sue the guy, come back and sue the guy in the wheelchair and take his wheelchair.
You're right. The Trump case is in New York. We don't know what can happen there.
Well, Trump's got the money to handle his shit.
I don't think it'll go to Trump.
People are beginning to see exactly what's going on. Look at these transgender. Look at these shots all these transgenders that's been involved in these mass shootings of late. They all have had those puberty blocks.
Well, you're right. Yeah, that's a trending topic, too. What, two or three days ago? This week. A transgender female. Whoa, man. I get confused. A transgender male, which was biologically born a female, went and shot up some kids. I mean, shot some people up at a school in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that ain't the way the news report. They call the female a female. They don't call them a male. Now but in any other instance, the when they trans like that, they want to be called what they recognize themselves as being, but the news are not doing that. And see, anybody that has been taking these busy
blocks,
they should not be allowed.
I go by what nature. I know. I go by what nature and DNA identifies them. So
well,
that person, yeah, that whatever, they were biologically born a woman.
Well, I agree with you. Now, here's the thing.
Mm.
Anyone that has taken these puberty block shots, they should not be allowed to have a weapon. Right? Maybe you want to exclude them and put them on the no-fly list. Right? Did not the military say years ago that they will not take anyone that's ever been on Ritalin? Right?
Repeat that. I didn't catch that.
Years ago, the military put a point out that anyone that has been on Ritalin would not be admitted into the military service.
Okay. All right. That's quite a few.
Well, the same thing should apply to people that have been put on those puberty block vaccinations. Because from the demonstrations we have seen here, examples we've seen here of recent, everybody's went out to shoot up kids at one point received those shots. And they shouldn't be allowed to have weapons. Because those who have received the shots are taking weapons and went out and tried to kill kids. So if you want an equal application of the law, if you want equal application of the law, then that has to be considered.
Right.
Huh?
Well, something's got to be done with all these shootings.
Well, it ain't the guns, it's the people, right?
I agree. Guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Yeah. So if you got to do something with the people, then the ones that are taking these puberty block shots should not be allowed to have guns because they would take the guns and do something with the guns that they otherwise shouldn't be doing. I don't do that with my gun. I ain't never had no puberty block shots.
But they got a strong political lobby, Bianchi. They got a very strong political lobby. And that law's not going to get on the books. That's my belief. They got a strong political lobby.
Yeah, but all these other excuses they talk about why they shouldn't have certain guns. Well, here's one that's quite obvious in your face. And it's got examples that go along with it. But anyway, it's getting late. I'm going to get off from here.
Yeah, let me
today
take
is
this
Friday,
up and call you before we went. Yeah, today's Friday.
All right, well, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Good talking to you. All right, 309 area code, your mic is open. Okay, 309.
Hey, L.A., good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
You hear me?
I'm feeling 100% again.
You still not 100% yet?
No, I am 100% now. I'm back to normal. I was miserable for 2 days. Just miserable for 2 days.
I could tell.
Some night, backed me up. So I'm good now, though. Well, be sure you're here Monday. I'm going to send you the link. You'll be one of the first ones to get it early Monday morning. But before the system sends it out. But you, matter of fact, you'll probably be the, out of all the people that I know about that call in here, you'll be able to immediately lock on to what this guy's talking about Monday. Matter of fact, he might even know. I don't know.
Right, right. You never know who I know.
But it's one of these guys. I don't want to announce his name because, you know, I'm kind of superstitious on that. I don't want to jinx it, so. But I wrote up the link for his program like 3 days ago. Huh?
Nah, you did. I said you did good this way. It's got suspense.
Right.
You know,
so.
Just a picture. But you know, I was really enjoying, you know, listening to the logic that he was just speaking.
Yeah.
You know, about a lot of things. That is a very wise man. You know, he put some thought into what he was saying, and he made sense.
Right.
You know, I think the first reparation that needs to happen to show equality and humanity. And it gives everyone an equal chance. No one looks at that color and what was done, because you know we're a young country. When we talk about other countries, they're thousands of years old and been in war.
Exactly.
The whole time.
This is a very young. The United States isn't even 250 years old yet. So you got Egypt's gold. Man, we can trace Egypt back. We can go about 5,000 years on Egypt alone. And there are many towns that are 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years old. You know, mostly a lot of them are on the other side. They're not in the Western Hemisphere, of course. But, and so this is a very young thing. We're still babies. If you compare it to someplace like Egypt.
You hit that one right
What would
you
say, Chris?
I said you hit that right on the head. We were still a baby.
Yeah, we're still babies. You know, so, so Monday, that I would say, now, I've done over 2,000 of these podcasts, over 2,300, I think, now. Monday, in my opinion, will be probably the most important one on Monday. It does deal with tiny houses. I'll say that much. But it is
very good. Out of all of your podcasts,
the person has been on
one that you feel the best.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful.
Matter of fact, Carlos might want to listen in on. Now, it'll be over where you can ask the guy questions. Okay, because all I'm being doing Monday is I'm moderating.
Cool.
But, this guy's got some. He's not. It's not what he's going to do. It's what they've done. So, I'm sure people will get a lot out of it too. Anyway, anything
you
else, Chris? Because I'm about.
Yeah, there's several things, but it ain't nothing that we gotta. Sorry, I dropped my earpiece. I'm walking around the job site.
Sure.
I think I'm wondering, you know, just like you said, you know, an indictment is somebody being officially accused of something. I agree
right.
with you. Do I think that we're going to have a president in prison? I don't think it would look good on our country.
Nope.
Just like you brought up the part about Gerald Ford pardoning Nixon
right.
and you know, we've dealt with scandals and all of that at and you know, just back here in the 90s, you know, we had a sitting president that got taken off the seat over his actions.
Right.
So they didn't.
And
get
see, what they've indicted. Well, they, you know, the specifics of the indictment will come out, I guess, next week, but. Essentially, I mean, from what's come out so far, this is over Stormy Daniels, who's a porn person. He didn't kill nobody. Okay. You know, it's not a case of, I mean, you know, Edward Kennedy, late, I mean, chap acquitted. I don't know if he was drunk driving, whatever, but somebody died, I mean, in that case, but that was, so it gives a bad look, but I can't. There's no way he'll ever do a day in jail. No way. If that happened, that would be a super bad look on the United States. And based on that, I don't think he'll go. But all, you know, it's no. Very, very, very early. And typically, with a lot of these prosecutions, they horse trade. Okay. If you give me this, we'll give you that. They meet in the middle, and then it's, you know, it's resolved, settled. So this, my theory is, and I can't prove it, my theory is it's politically motivated. They do not want him running for president again. That's just my theory, but I'm just one out of 8 billion people.
And I agree. That's why they're doing what they're doing. If they can do this, he can't run for president. You know,
now what I heard on a video this morning, he can still run for president. Right now he can still keep his campaign going. And let's see, I don't know if it's a misdemeanor or if they're trying to work it up to a felony, but right now. He can still campaign, but it's so early in that race. I mean, I don't know if anybody from the Democratic side is thrown in the hat. And then I've only heard of Ron DeSantis, to my knowledge, hasn't officially thrown in his hat. There's talk that he might run for president, but officially, to my knowledge, he hasn't thrown in his hat. You got Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina. She's thrown in her hat, but it's super, super early, very early. So, and Trump threw his hat in the ring first on the Republican side. So, you know, that's my theory. It's politically motivated. I can't back that up with no proof, but, you know, I'm just one opinion out of 8 billion, so. We'll see what happens. On that note, we're out of time for today. Make sure you're here Monday with pen, paper, whatever you take notes with. Of course, you can call in and talk to the guests, pick their brain. It'll be well worth it. Everybody have a good rest of the day and great weekend.